can have them turn it. I can have them turn the mics off at any time.
You
just
could
keep that on.
Maybe just mine, not the girls. It's just like Monday, Saturday, or Sunday. I don't even know what day it is. It was so cold. I'm always cold, darling. I'm just no blood. Okay.
I guess I should have a handy water bottle. Like, that's a brand opportunity.
2 minutes. 1 minute.
Yeah.
My mint.
It'd be like.
Is this on?
Oops.
No. We have one more minute to wait, but we have tended to get like a last minute rush, so we're going to give folks that 1 minute.
Yes.
Sure.
Oh, where is my phone? Mike, can you also take? Do you mind? Backing?
Oh, I did the other
one.
It's okay.
Good morning. It's not up on thing. This is the first session I have. We have not had a sign for the seminar, and I keep repeating the name of the seminar, and I'm starting to feel foolish doing it. But in this case, this is the seminar, How to Tell Your Company Story in Media's Changing Landscape, which is here to provide ideas about how to do and deal with incredibly rapid evolving media landscape. Emily Capiello, Principal, Emily Jane Communications, and expert panelists, Susan Giardina, owner Giardina Communications, Kristen Fuller, Managing Director, Field Marketing and Media, Erica Finnemore, Home Director, Real Simple, and Nicole Papantonio, Director of Kitchen Appliance Lab, Good Housekeeping, will provide a look at what's happening and how to engage in successful media outreach. A point of focus will be shifting media dynamics and what houseware suppliers need to do to secure quality placement for their brands, including public relations basics and building media relationships. And with that, I'll give it to Emily.
Well, thanks, guys. Hello, good morning. I'm Emily Capiello. Some of you may know me from Homeworld Business and Gourmet Insider. And when the magazine shuttered, I could not fathom leaving houseware. So here I am. I decided to start my own public relations business, you know, the pivot that so many people did. And I have these great panelists with me today because something that I've noticed being both a journalist and in public relations is how fast the media is changing. It is so hard to tell your company story, and it's so hard to just cut through all of the clutter that's out there. Everyone has a story to tell, so how are you separating yourself from the bunch? I just want my panelists to chat for 1 second about why they're here and what their expertise is. So, Erica, I'm going to start with you just for a quick intro, and then we'll get moving along.
Sure. Hi, I'm Erica Finnemore. I'm the home director at Real Simple Magazine. Before that, I was at Food Network Magazine, HGTV Magazine, and InStyle Magazine. So I've had a lot of years checking out the best home goods, kitchenware, cleaning supplies, writing about them, testing them, and that's why I'm here.
Nicole.
And I'm Nicole Papantonio. I'm the Kitchen Appliances and Innovation Lab Director at Good Housekeeping. So that's where we test all different products and write reviews on them. I started my career in magazines as a journalist, was a food editor. I worked at Ladies Home Journal, Family Circle, developing recipes. But I've also worked in product development at some key kitchen appliance brands. So understand the product side and really love the industry.
Hi, I'm Susan Giardina, Giardina Communications. I've probably been in the industry the longest here. I've had my PR company for almost 30 years, specializing solely in housewares, you know, kitchens and tabletop and home decor. And it's been quite the ride. It has changed so much, so I'm excited to be here just to share along with these girls what's changed and how we can get the most out of it.
Hi, I'm Kristen Fuller, Field Marketing and Media. I think this is probably my 20th year or so. Field Marketing and Media has been around for over 30, and we also specialize in the housewares industry, which is great because we get to work with a lot of great editors and get to know them as well. So, thank you.
Awesome. So we're going to get started. I'm going to start with Erica and Nicole. Just if you could give us kind of a rough landscape, what are you seeing right now in media and, you know, the pace of how things are changing?
Rock, paper, scissors for
it. Yeah, so as I'm sure all of you know, things are changing really quickly. It used to be where you had just print. Now you are trying to gather content for print, for digital, for TikTok, for Instagram, for your newsletter. So we've needed more content than ever. We've been creating more content than ever. And there are less people to do that than ever, I would say, because, you know, companies are shrinking a little bit, how many people take on tasks. So I think the biggest thing is that we're looking for so much information and so much content every day for different things, for the present, for the future. There's no longer really, you know, long lead or short lead. I feel like most people are a little bit of both. And I think that's something that's really changed, at least since I got into magazines.
Yeah. Erica, actually something that you just said that's very important is the content. So what can brands do to package their content or to provide you with content that works? Or is there, you know, is that something that brands maybe shouldn't do anymore? Is it just, you know, you don't need video, you don't need audio, or you don't need Q&As from brands, you just need certain things. So how has that been changing? Either one of you is fine.
That's a good question. So I read all my emails, constantly sent emails, really important, really helpful to have personal relationships with the PR teams and the brands to really understand your messaging. You made a good point about video. Like, we don't really need those assets, like your video assets, your photo assets. A lot of our content management systems pull directly from your site where the product is being sold, so we don't need high-res images really unless it's going into print. So in terms of delivering the information you're trying to get to us, small bites are really helpful. Press releases kind of are helpful, but I kind of just want to see, like, is there a picture in there? What's the price? Is there a quick link I could get more information? So honestly, the more casual for me, the better, like just to have more relationships with people. And it's always a two-way street, that's kind of how I put it, where it's like, sure, I need maybe something like a sample really fast, but at the same time, I want to be able to help deliver your message as well.
I send like 10 press releases a week. Sorry, Nicole. So I will cut that down.
I will say, in the body of putting everything in the body of the email is like the best thing you could do for us. And if we don't respond, it's not because we're not interested or because we didn't see it. I put everything in a folder right away, but I don't necessarily get to respond to everything. But then when I'm working on a project and it's applicable, I will search for that thing in my inbox, and there everyone is. Yeah. So.
And all your PR releases are very friendly and approachable. It's always something exciting about, like, guess what I'm trying right now? And I'm, like, eager to find that out because, again, there's, like, that personal touch. It doesn't feel like this formal letter written by somebody from 50 years ago.
Yeah. I like the hook.
Yeah, I'm really good at writing those. A former journalist in me, right? I want to make it funny. Susan, what is something that you are seeing from the public relations side that has become really important in getting coverage in the last, you know, year or two?
Wow, there's a lot of things. One thing I have found, because as Erica said, there's just a few people doing a lot of work. It's amazing, and as you all know from, you know, hearing it in the news, so many people have been laid off, and, you know, staffs have changed, and so there's just people are just so targeted down doing so much stuff, and then they're scattered. So you'll find like a lot of experts who are, I mean, they really know their field, they really know something in housewares, but they may be freelance, or they may be a content creator, or contributing but not in the building, or, you know, they may be working from home. So the most important thing now really is not necessarily trying to get into desk sides or meetings, but it's really knowing what people are working on, mm-hmm. what their stories are that are coming up, and that requires a lot of work on our part. Mm-hmm. What we try to, I try to do all the time is I subscribe to a lot of Substacks, mm-hmm. Newsletters. I try to find out what people have coming up, what they're interested in, what they've recently published, so I know what not to pitch them and also what to pitch, you know, maybe 6 months down the road. So it's a lot more research, far fewer press releases.
You know, the funny thing is, or that I feel, is sometimes clients don't understand that you're out there every day telling their brand story without a deliverable. They're like, but where's that press release? So how do you get that across, either Susan or Kristen, whoever wants to answer this, how do you get that across to your clients that, no, there are so many other things, so many other components to telling this story. It's not just a deliverable.
I think it's the constant communication with the editor and also telling the client, you know, hey, we've been doing this. And I always view PR as a momentum built business that builds over time. You know, I have a lot of like long-standing clients, and that is very true. You can start building the brand and planting the seeds, but also PR does not work in a funnel. It is one part of your overall marketing strategy, and all of those components have to work together to tell the story. And you just have to keep repeating the story. When you're introducing products, always have something about the brand in the pitch email, whether you're sending a press release or, you know, more condensed short bullet points with links. And we've also started like looking for SEO key terms, yes. mm-hmm. as well as like really targeting the subject line. So when you're searching your email and you don't have a need for it, mm-hmm. you know, 7 months from now you're doing something for coffee or cookware, and you can like search coffee or cookware, and that'll hopefully how we've written the subject line or put the content in the release will help you locate that when that's time.
It does. Yeah. And one thing I want to add is it's rare that something gets covered right away, especially in the magazine landscape. There's times that something, we might not have room to cover something until 2 or 3 years later, and it's just timelines have really changed. Like at Good Housekeeping and Hearst, we have deadlines every month, and we are told about them sometimes months in advance, sometimes not, but always having that information in our pocket really helps potentially for, again, 2 years down the line that I maybe tested air fryers 6 months ago, but then I'm writing about air fryers 6 months later in the magazine, but I'm like, oh, there's one I didn't test, so let me call that in at this point. So it can happen right away, but it can also take a really long time to get covered. And there's just not as much freedom to write about products the way we used to, where it's more curated, and honestly, we're a business, which I think people forget, and we have to make sure that there's the return on investment for us as well.
I actually was going to save that till later, but let's jump on that business right now that you've brought it up. You know, SEO is mm-hmm. king right now, as well as e-com. And if you're not on Amazon, if you're not on Skimlinks, if you're not on ShareASale, that can be very difficult to get your product covered. So can you guys talk about, you know, what is happening? How do you decide what products to use? And affiliate, as far as affiliates go, why is it so important for a brand to invest in being on an affiliate or on Amazon?
I'll start. So obviously we're picking products that we've tested, that we trust, that we love, but we're also, you know, e-com is a huge business for us, and we're looking to grow our business through those e-com articles, through these reviews. So really when we're writing, we're looking specifically for items that have these affiliate links that we can work in. We do sometimes include things that don't have them, but if there's two products we're in between and one has an affiliate link and one doesn't, it makes it, you know, a little easier to choose the one with the affiliate link. You know, I wish it used to not be that way, but that's really the way it is. So if you have a product, you have to get an affiliate link, or it's going to be harder to get coverage.
And our e-com editors will yell at us less
if you have a link.
Affiliate, because both Eric and I have been doing this for a long time, and we are journalists first, and that is really important to us. Like, we're taught to be ethical and non-biased, and we want to really support the products that we think deserve to be there, but then an e-com editor will say, hey, we're not making any money of this, can you put this in there? And usually the answer is no. So like, especially on Good Housekeeping, like if there's a product, no matter how much money it'll make us, that we don't stand by with our testing, mm-hmm. we won't write about it. And if you're wondering like, oh, why didn't Good Housekeeping review that? It's probably for a reason. We only write about the things that we really trust and can stand by as a brand, but also as Nicole Papantonio, someone who's been in this industry for a while.
I think that's something that Real Simple and Good Housekeeping share too. Like, we know our audience trusts us to find these amazing things and to vet these products. So yes, we want affiliate links, but yes, we also personally like test them and love them and want to put them out there. But yeah, it does make it easier for us if there is an affiliate link with something we already love, because then we don't have to fight for it. It's just a very obvious inclusion.
Exactly. Susan, how has this impacted the way that you speak about your clients and which clients you put forward?
Actually, it's a really big impact. Mm-hmm. One of my issues with the affiliate links is I have many European brands, and they don't do a lot of PR in Europe. So they don't really get it.
It runs differently. I also have a lot of European brands, and it runs a little bit differently.
Right. And so they'll be like, well, why do we need to do this? And they'll want the affiliate link to be their company's affiliate link on share or sale or whatever. They always want that. And they're like, we're pushing for that. Well, then you explain to them, well, this particular outlet has an Amazon page and it's going to link to Amazon or it's not going to be in there. And so there's a lot of expectations have to be managed on how you do the affiliate links. It used to be these guys would like, they'd spread it out.
Yep.
Because you had control of it. The journalists had control, and they went, well, we want to do Sur La Table, we want to do this, we want to do that. Nowadays, the e-commerce does step in and have preferences, and that's what I find. Mm-hmm. So I have to keep my clients understanding that.
I mean, Eric and I we just had a conversation, an hour ago with one of my clients who said, but what if we give them more money than they would make on Amazon? But with Amazon, it's not just about the product that is on the list. It's actually about everything you put in your cart. So whatever you put in your cart post leaving that article page on that link gets, you get commission on. So of course, you wanted to buy an air fryer, but you also bought two $200 carpets, and they're making money off of that, plus accessories.
Yeah, it's also ease. Like, everyone has the Amazon app on their phone. Like, I order things, like, you know, on my subway ride to work. The fact that people are so willing to use it, people see products that once they see they're on Amazon, they're more likely to buy it, too.
Right.
And that's...
Right. Mm-hmm. And I would assume return rates also on Amazon, where it's... You can return it, absolutely no problem. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, it's like, of course, free returns delivery, but it's part of it, ease. I agree.
Yeah. It's kind of wild, right?
I'll also give like a list. You know, I'll give like two or three like retailers that I also know have affiliate links and then let the outlet choose.
Yeah. That's great.
With Amazon being one of them.
And we're trying to do that more at Hearst, basically give the reader the choice of where to buy. So we have our partners listed, but also give them the ultimate choice.
Yeah. All right. So now that we have all of that in our heads, what is the best way to get your attention when we are speaking about our brands? Nicole, I'll start with you because I feel like poor Erica. I've been starting with her the whole time.
To me, being personal really helps. Knowing who you're pitching really helps. When I get pitches that are telling me how great Better Homes and Gardens is, like, sure, I agree with you, but I also don't work there. So that's really a problem. And then, again, just I like seeing emails in my inbox. Again, I archive absolutely everything. So the more you stay in touch with me, I'll reach out for sure when it's relevant, but it's just always nice to remember, like, oh, right, there's that really cool thermometer I wanted to test, because we get a ton. Like, my team covers everything related to cooking, eating, and drinking. So it's... from large appliances to knives, and we keep track of all of it. So really, and also to constantly pitch me, oh, why didn't you write about this? We have this. Like, take the time out to maybe understand our brand, or even say, can we get on a quick phone call? Can you share a little bit more of how you do things? Like, I like grabbing a coffee, even if it's a quick Zoom call, so open to that. So I'd rather ask me those questions versus say, can you write about this? Because there's probably a reason we're not writing about it, and I'm happy to share that with you, but I'm most likely not going to put that into writing, per se.
Agreed. Erica?
I would say those relationships are so important. Like, I'm more likely, if I know who you are and we've worked together, to respond, to, you know, give you some insight into what's going on in my world and what stories I'm working on. So same as Nicole, like, I love grabbing a coffee with someone. Placing a face is so important. If you're not, you know, where we live, a Zoom meeting is just as good, but I feel like just having that relationship, you know, it builds trust on each side, and I think it's really important. And I would say just having everything up front in a pitch is really important. Like if you, you're coming out with a new line of, you know, organizing gear, but you don't send any images with it. Yeah. And then I have to reach out to you to get more information. That's but
sometimes we want to do that so that you talk to me to get more information.
Probably not.
You're like hard pass. We're not responding.
But yeah, I love getting those images. And again, for print, we do need high res. So if you're going to pitch something to print, like you need to have siloed images of it. That's the number one thing we're looking for. So just having those assets ready for us.
And I think we're past the days of just sending samples. We test so much. And if anyone is ever in New York, you're welcome to come visit our labs. But there are boxes higher and taller than me because there's so much product. And like, I really try to make sure that everything that we receive is tested. We get the data. It goes to a good place. So like, don't send product unsolicited because we might not get to it. And that's a shame for both of us, really.
Kristen?
There was a day when we used to send, like, cute little, like, samples, and they would, like, get picked up, and that those days are long gone.
Yeah.
It's also not worth the brand's money if someone comes to you and says, hey, we'll send out 50 samples for you, because that's not an effective way to get PR in today's world.
And that was all happening from, like, our apartments during COVID,
yes.
for example.
Yeah.
So to think, like, just all this extra... Like, honestly, garbage, like the fillers, the cardboard, the boxes things used to come in, the random super cheap spatula because you're trying to sell, like, something related but different. Sustainability is also something we're thinking about, and those PR packages could be
They're wasteful. So cumbersome, and all the cardboard boxes that just pile up in your apartment and your house, and you don't know what to do with them until garbage day. It's quite terrible.
Yeah, and in New York, it's only once a week, so it's like, how do you do this?
But on the flip side, if you want to try something, like if someone sends you something to try and you want to try that thing, there's nothing more helpful for us than to try and test a product on our own.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Like, I know we were talking about this earlier. If you have a brand new knife, like, you know, Kingshan, like you sent me a knife from them. I never used it. I used it. Now I'm a huge fan. And that wouldn't have happened had I not used that product. And the same has happened to me with Green Pan and a number of other products. Like if you're sending me, like, you know, talking about something that you really need to use to understand, then it's invaluable to have that product.
Mm. Housewares are those things, right? Like housewares are those. It's not wine or spirits or food. It is you have to use this knife. You have to use this pan. You have to test it a few times. It might not work the right way the first time. I have a pizza oven client. I tell everybody, your first pizza is going to be terrible. Your second pizza is going to be great because you have to test it for yourself. So
cleaning products, same thing. You know, if you don't see it for yourself, you don't know and you can't. Pitch it as well.
Exactly.
You can also write about something better even if you just have the product in your hand. So maybe we haven't been able to like do our full lab testing on the product. Just using it as a consumer, I can understand the handle, I can understand the base, I can understand the rivets, how easy it is to clean. So really just even when I have writers writing for me, I encourage them to come into the lab, see the pieces, look at it, because they'll have an opinion too. So yeah, I guess long story short is just ask if we want samples, and we'll let you know.
And send the sample, right? Yeah. Send the sample if they want a sample. So, Kristen, after so many years in the industry,
yes,
and with so many great clients, how do you keep the enthusiasm when you are telling the same brand story just with new products?
I think the key is the innovation. I mean, the brands need to keep innovating their products and coming out with new technology, and really that then becomes the story. I mean, in the media world, they want to know what's new. They want to know the trends that are emerging. And I think the brands, on their end, they need to keep developing products that are, you know, looking forward and always innovating and always introducing new technology. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Susan, how do you tell your brand stories? Or how do you keep explaining over and over again what makes your brand so special?
I agree with Kristen, but most of my brands are heritage brands, and they are the ones that will argue that their history of 200 years or whatever is the most important thing. So I'm always negotiating with my clients. They do need the innovations, but it always has to be married with the heritage piece, because that is what makes them different than anybody else. When you're working with journalists, most of them, like these guys and other people in the industry, they know these heritage brands, and they appreciate that the fact that some company's been around for 200 years, that they handcraft things, and those pieces are pretty much they're a stable to go to.
Is there a point in time where you took a big risk with a brand and it kind of paid off or didn't pay off? We can marinate on that and come on back to it. For my journalist friends, is there a pitch or a portfolio that really works for you? Is there a way that people are sending you information that you're like, I always want to receive it this way?
Clear subject line. I love receiving things that are part of larger trends. You know, a lot of my pieces are about decorating, organizing trends, and cleaning trends. So I'm doing kind of a more holistic piece. So if you feel like your product is part of a larger trend, definitely tell me that and share that with me. You know, I could be working on a story about, you know, like cleaners that take under 5 minutes, or, you know, organization bins that are, you know, made of bamboo because that's hot right now. But if you can send that in the pitch and be like, you know, we have bamboo organizers, this is the hottest new thing, that's helpful to me. You know, it makes it rise above other stuff, and it helps me kind of marinate on those ideas and maybe be able to pitch them as something else. Because like Nicole said, it is very hard for us to write about one item at a time. You know, we're SEO, I guess, is a big thing, and we're expected to do a lot more for digital. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having it as part of something and helping us figure out what that's a part of is so invaluable.
And I would say for us at Good Housekeeping, it's we pay a lot of attention to claims. So when a brand claims that they're like the best pan in the world, or they are better than the competitor because of, like, they never say why they're better than the competitor. They're always just like, we're the best. That's a red flag for me, and that, like, that's alarming because I can't stand by that. Like, that's very, very subjective. So for me, giving me the facts is the most helpful thing, of course, explaining to me like what makes your product stand out. Like, we delve into products really deep, so the dorkier, the geekier, the like more information you give us, like, our team loves that, and that's also what sets our reviews apart from other brands. Like, we were talking about this, but like, we want to know how that glass is blown and what that material is, or we'll ask the hard questions of like, okay, so if it's, you're not using a PTFE coating, what are you using and what are your lab reports behind it and how do we know it's actually safe? So, and then again, also just like supporting the industry. So if there's brands putting down other brands, like, that's not really something we support. It's like, we're all in this. Yeah, so if you have a good product, it'll rise to the top. Don't try to convince me otherwise. Don't try to trick me, because I see right through it, basically.
Are there claims now? And I'm thinking actually mostly with sustainability. I feel like a sustainability claim is almost expected at this point. And if you are claiming sustainable for whatever reason, is there actually something behind that? I feel like that's still a really interesting, murky place to be.
Yeah. And we want to see that. There are tons of certifications you can have. You can be made out of FSC certified hardwood, you know, Green Guard certified. There are all these, you know, kind of distinctions you can have, and that helps prove to us that what you're saying is true, that you're, you know, using less water, that you're using recycled materials. If, you know, if you have a sustainability claim and it's valid, definitely give us all the information you can on that and highlight it, because I know at Real Simple, and I'm sure at a lot of other publications, sustainability is such a giant focus of ours year round. You know, beyond, like, you know, they used to be like the green issue every year. We do it all year long now. So definitely highlight those, and then, like Nicole said, give us all the facts, give us the certifications, tell us exactly how your product is sustainable.
Yeah, and if you're marketing something, make sure you can back it up. Like, my team is made up of many different scientists. Like, our beauty lab, they're all chemists. We have a mechanical engineer on staff. We have a chemical engineer. We have an environmental scientist. So if someone's telling me something's compostable, but it actually has a resin handle, that raises a red flag to me. But then I could go to my team and say, wait a minute, like, am I wrong or am I off? And they're like, no, you're actually right. And then there's definitely been times where the brands realize, like, we need to fix that because that is false.
So I'm just going to shift gears really quickly, and I want to talk about how important the relationship is between editor and PR. We touched on it a little bit, but, you know, it is one of the most important things, and it's something that, especially from a public relations standpoint, you have to manage that expectation with the client. I always explain that public relations is a slow burn, right? Mm-hmm. People will come to me and they'll say, oh, you can get me a Martha Stewart tomorrow if we sign on the dotted line today. And I'm like, well, actually, that's not how it works. I'm like, it's about 3 months before anybody cares that I rep you. And then it's 6 months before somebody will come to me usually and say, oh, you rep them. Can we want to get it in this issue or can we get a sample? And, you know, so I'm going to start because Kristen, you are nodding your head like, yes, yes, yes. So, yeah, I'd like to start with you and how important that is and some of, you know, the key things that you do to create those relationships.
So regular communication, being personable, getting to kind of know them like in this new world of the digital age. We try to go to media events maybe once a year so that, you know, we can have the face-to-face time and really just being honest and genuine and giving them what they need when they need it in a timely manner and responding to their requests because I do hear from a lot of journalists that sometimes they want a sample from someone, not me, and then they never hear back from the PR person, and that is not, that's not good for people who do public relations. It gives, you know, something what we do a little bit of a, you know, bad ting in people's eyes. So really just creating genuine relationships and even contacting them when you don't need anything. Just saying, hey, how's it going? You know, what are you working on? You know, in two short sentences.
Also,
I think in today's world where, unfortunately, a lot of journalists have, like, transitioned to freelance, it's very challenging to kind of manage those because where do they go? Like, you're constantly having to, you know, update lists and reach out to people and, you know, it can be a little bit hard to say, are you still, you know, working at this publication? You know, when you don't, you know, talk to them a couple times a year. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Regular, genuine communication.
I find, too, that sometimes e-com editors are not visible on Muckrack or other places because they are very behind the scenes. So that's been a challenge for me. So, mm-hmm. Susan, how are you managing that challenge?
It comes back again to the research. I mean, I really read everything. I mean, I get Good Housekeeping. I get Real Simple. I get a lot of magazines mm-hmm. still. I subscribe digitally. I subscribe to Substacks. You know, I read what people mm-hmm. are doing. It's like a really large portion of my time is into what are people actually working on? Mm-hmm. What are their interests? Sometimes it changes. So you have to keep up on that. So you really have to be a consumer of that media mm-hmm. that you're targeting.
I'm glad we love this media because we are reading all the time, right?
Yes.
So what are some of the challenges in media right now, both from the journalist side and the PR side? I know you guys said you are working really, really hard. You're doing 2, 3, 4 jobs. But what do you see as far as, you know, the next 2 years, what the main challenges are going to be in this landscape?
One thing, when Erica answered the very first question, one thing that came to mind is we don't have nearly as much time as maybe, like, people at magazines did in the past. Like, for example, there would be one category test a month because there were 12 issues and they were testing refrigerators, or that's a big one. Let's say, like, coffee makers for that one issue. So they had all the time to just focus on the coffee maker category. Now we get at least 12 assignments a month and the quality is still there. It's like maybe we're not testing as many coffee makers at one time as we used to, but the quality is still there. So time is just not on our side. So that's a big balance of trying to figure out. And then as for the next few years, conversations, like, as journalists, I was never brought into conversations about, like, how does my article make money or what do I bring into this company? And when I had gone to a startup and I was like, we got a mention on this Facebook page, the CEO at the time was like, what does that mean for me? So it's just like bringing people more into the conversation of how to keep these businesses up and running. So I always say it's like very much a journalist first, but also looking for new business opportunities for my lab so we can hire more people, so we can keep growing, so we can be relevant, so our magazine doesn't fold. And it's really sad because I've worked at three different magazines and they're all folded. So it's just like having that business brain on still and still delivering really ethical content.
Yeah.
And I would say another challenge is that we're working on so many things at a time.
Yeah.
You know, like right now I have text that's overdue for July, August, and a pitch that I'm late on for October, which I will do right after this if if anyone's listening. But we're working on stuff so far in advance, and then also, you know, launches for digital and things that are coming up right now, you know, TikTok videos on brand new products. So I think it's a challenge to juggle all of those things. And what I would say is, if you know you're pitching, if you think you're pitching a digital editor only, or you think you're pitching an only print editor, you're probably not. You're probably pitching a little of both. So definitely, if you have a short lead item, send it our way. If you have a long lead item, send it our way. But you can basically assume at all times that we need something for the next 6 months to a year, ready and prepped. So I think keeping that all straight in your mind is tough, but again, just loving getting that content from, you know, PR and everyone.
I'm literally going home and writing my Christmas press releases.
It's coming up close sooner than you think.
I know, you just said October, and I know. Went, what? It's March.
And an editorial, too, for example, like Erica might finish her story completely, send it in, it's shipping in 2 days, and then the editor-in-chief will be like, actually, I don't want to feature this. Do you have something else we can put here? So we need to have that information at the tip of our fingertips.
So long lead becomes short lead real fast.
Yeah, real fast. Always plan A, plan C. Plan A, plan B, plan C, always in media, right? So, Susan, what do you see from the public relations side being a challenge in the next few years?
Well, obviously managing the influencer piece.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously a whole nother.
That's a completely other discussion, panel discussion that I did not want to have. Sorry, guys.
Well, I'm only mentioning it because it is a part of the PR world. That is another piece. And they, many people who are influencers are in the media, or they were in the media. So you have to be really selective and use your time wisely. And yeah, we'll save that for another time.
Yeah, I mean, I do see that pivot, though. A lot of people who were on staff, now their magazines have folded and they've turned to influencers. And you know, I do a little bit of that in my business, not so much because that is day-to-day, but I do explain to people, if you have a little bit of money in a short amount of time to make an impact, let's go influencer. If you really want to make a long-term relationship and a long-term impact, that's where we go, you know, journalist, and we go straight media. So, you know, that's really up to the client at that point and managing their expectations. So, yeah. Kristen?
Affiliate marketing, I think, is going to continue to be something that's very integrated into the PR world, and working with those affiliate links, whether it be Amazon, Skimlinks, using, you know, companies that have more national retailers that have those systems built in. I think that that's going to be a trend. And also just the research, as Susan said, like we spend more time researching sometimes than pitching.
Oh, I agree. Although I feel also we're going to have less places to tell valuable stories. Mm-hmm. So we have to really make those stories count going forward. So yeah, an affiliate too with, you know, that's really going to hurt a small brand that's maybe a startup that is probably great. I had a client like that. I had a great client, and I said, well, I can't really do much with this because you're not on Amazon or an affiliate. So, you know, they're going to work on doing that, and then we're going to work together when they get it together. Yeah, exactly. So any last thoughts on anything before we open the floor to some questions? Do you have?
Just really quickly, you know, both our brands are heritage brands, and Real Simple is so proud of what it puts out there, and we're so invested in the products, and we spend so much time testing them and researching them. And what helps us is, again, with the relationships. I know Emily very well. I know so many people here well. Knowing that you're pitching me something that's great for my brand, and knowing that you understand what my brand is and what Real Simple expects out of a product, that makes me much more likely to test it, to want to get a sample in, to write about it. So the most important thing is building those relationships, because it's helpful for us, it's helpful for you, and I think in the end, the readers really win.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, definitely, that is very, very important, is, you know, keep going out for cocktails. That's exactly That's exactly it. So, yeah, so we have a few minutes left, and I'd just like to open the floor to see if anyone has any questions about what we had to say. Go ahead. Mike is coming with a microphone.
Mike with the mic.
Mike with the mic.
Hi there. I'm interested.
You can stand. It's okay. We're all friends here.
So my name is Raghav. I run a robotics company. We build cooking robots for home. You mentioned right now that it's important for people like us to understand how your business works. In today's world, how does your business work? Do you make most of your money through print media? Is it mostly through subscription of your digital publication? Is it through affiliate marketing? Help us understand how your business works so we can do justice to you.
I think that's a really great question. My biggest part of my job is the digital content that we produce, and that makes up the biggest income that we have. And that's actually for all of Hearst. Good Housekeeping brings in almost half of all of Hearst's affiliate content. It's really incredible. So that's a really big deal. I have a monthly column in the magazine, so that takes up a little bit of time. And then my team puts out another feature every month on, let's say, outdoor living or a smart home, where all of our different teams come together to write that one story. So there's a lot of writing opportunities. Social is really big, so we have our TikToks and Instagram that we try to support. A big part of my job is brand relationships and brand partnerships. And while we are lucky, I would say, to not have to close deals, for example, just working with sales and offering leads on how we can build more meaningful relationships that also translate into, honestly, dollars for both brands, because that's really important. And really just seeking out new ways to do it. A lot of conversations with PR and brands to learn about products, going to trade shows, going to events, having meetings. I would say that's the bulk of what we do.
And there's sponsored content, mm-hmm. too, right, that they can work on. And
yeah. Advertorials.
Advertorials, yep, exactly.
Things like that, yeah.
Anyone else?
It seems like trade shows are changing.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering, how are you viewing that, and how are you looking to it as a platform to find new products and new stories, and what's the role of the trade show in your year as you're trying to do your job?
Yeah, I mean, I think trade shows offer a number of benefits to us. First, again, it lets us place a face. There are so many people that we talk to over email for a long time, and then we finally get to meet them at these trade shows, and that is just so helpful. Also, seeing the products in person, Nicole said, we can't get a sample of everything, or we can't get into our apartments. So just being able to see a number of items at one time is really great. And then also, it's just an experience and an opportunity for us to check out new brands. Walking the show, you might see something you're totally unfamiliar with that blows your mind. And knowing that we have these come up, I know that, I'm going to pitch a number of articles based on what I see here, today, yesterday, Sunday. So I think it's really about kind of using it as a platform to get some ideas for features off of, and to just strengthen those connections or make new connections.
Yeah, for me, it's, I would say, the strengthening of connections. Even with your product, getting to see it in real life when you came to the lab, reaching out to us, that was really meaningful. So again, to see you here was just like, oh wait, yes, tell me more about this product. Sadly, I think businesses are tightening budget, so we have to push harder to come to these type of events. So that's hard, but it's just I feel like the entire industry kind of needs to give everyone a reason to keep coming back.
I do feel trade shows are still really important to journalists, but they are, brands are sending less people. Representatives, when they used to come full force, right? Erica would come with her whole team, and Nicole would come with her whole team, and now it's just Erica and Nicole,
yes.
And maybe an advertising person. So I do feel that is very important, both to journalists and, to Trendspot and to public relations, right? That's very important for us to be here. It's FaceTime with mm-hmm. clients. It's FaceTime with journalists. It's, even scoping for new business if you are so blessed to be able to scope for new business. But yeah. Do you have any guys, anything, want to add anything?
No.
Anybody else have a question? You have a question.
Question?
Sir?
1 second.
Thanks, everybody. Wondering is there any surprising places where you're looking for stories besides pitches from all of us? Where do you look for to find a trend or to uncover something?
TikTok. I don't even want to say I hate to say that because it's part of it. What's showing up on our feeds is what people are looking for. So that's it's not surprising. It's just, I don't want it to be there, but it is. I don't want to be spending hours looking, but I do.
The doom scroll.
It's part of my life.
You know, TikTok, Instagram. Honestly, if we're working on stories that are kind of more pragmatic, I'll look at Reddit, because if someone's asking a question and tons of people are asking the same question, like, you know, do I really need a top sheet is a big thing we've answered at Real Simple a couple times. And if everyone's wondering that, that's a great story for us. So it's really looking in these Facebook chat rooms. Like, there's now a Facebook group for everything. Like, I was talking to Le Creuset yesterday, and there's a big Le Creuset, like, you know, enthusiast group on Facebook that now I'm in because I just want to see it all. So you can find people that are really interested in things anywhere. And I think just aggregating all that social data by, you know, just what we do day to day.
And I would say, too, like, smaller, more focused summits and events. Like, you were talking about kitchen robotics, like the Smart Kitchen Summit, for example. You are really going to find the people who are there really want to know about that topic. So we'll be there if that's something we're covering, for example. So more niche places, too, are really good ways of, like, getting, like, really key information across.
I also have to just put out there, as both, you know, a journalist and a public relations person, that journalists, people forget, I think, that journalists are really curious people, and that's probably why we became journalists in the first place. So, you know, if we see something that sparks our interest, I mean, I'll be out having a drink and some oysters, and I'm like, hey, how can you tell the difference between East Coast oysters and West Coast oysters? And then I have to Google it, right? And then the next thing I know, I'm pitching a story to an editor. So we are curious by nature, and I think that really helps us, too, when it comes to putting together stories and pitches and ideas.
Anyone else?
I'm Kristen with DrinkMate. So I always wonder this, how important or tied is editorial and advertising or entering the Good Housekeeping seal?
Yeah. They're separate. Mm-hmm. Like, they are separate. I always say I'm so lucky that I don't have to close those deals and I don't have to worry about the numbers. I get to have the fun conversations, mm-hmm. cover your products, whether you accept advertising or not. Something like the Good Housekeeping seal, that is an advertising partnership, so we will make sure to cover that product more if you have the seal, because we are also trying to honor that relationship, but also, like, even that contract. So editorially, it's really up to us and our discretion and what works, but if you do earn the Good Housekeeping seal, then yes, we will write about you more, because that's actually part of advertising. And just making it very clear that it's, like, paid advertising.
But you have to earn that seal, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they're not just you're not just paying and saying, "Oh, I'm going to use this for a year." Yeah. Right? You have to earn it. So your product has to be
through rigorous testing, and the list goes on and on. Like, we could talk about that if you want.
Yeah.
Anyone else? I have something I want to ask you about.
Here it comes.
This is something, and it's based on a pet peeve, but a lot of things that has been said in this panel, I think we're really smart, because a lot of times public relations doesn't understand that there is a range of needs. One of the things that drives me crazy is if you send me and it can be a very good press release and it's something I want to write about, and all that's there is a video. Oh. I don't care about the video. Don't run them. And if I take a photo from your video, you haven't sent me high res, it's not going to look as good. So you're actually being self-defeating. Another thing that was said on the panel was good subject lines. I search my email for stuff all the time. Good succinct beginnings to press releases, because I may have a slot that needs that, and I don't really want to rewrite your whole press release to get it in that slot. And that also lets me know what's important. If I want to do something on your whole press release, do you have a sense, and to me, it's people who think, who are more focused on one aspect of media, whether it's blogging, whether it's, you know, they have a different perception of, or trying to influence somebody. Do you feel as if people have to think about journalists are going to use various kinds of things at various kinds of times, and that you need to cover all of that to really satisfy them and to start building a relationship, because you're always happier with people who've made your job easier?
Yeah. I just email them and email them and email them until they finally reply, and I beat them into submission. Yes.
I feel like if we want more information, we'll ask for more information. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you just mentioned, again, with the keywords, even in your email, it's so such a little thing, but in your signature, your name of your brand, the brands you represent, so I can go into my email and say, DrinkMate, and it actually comes up, because there's so many times I was looking for one of my friends, actually, and she just got to a new PR function, and her name is not in any of our emails because we're on a first name basis, but if it was in her signature, then I'd be able to find her email easily. But I literally had to text her. I'd be like, what is your email address?
But I do also want all that information up front. Like, anytime you're pitching me and I'm excited about something, you're giving me all the ammo I need to go to my senior editors and be like, I am so excited about this project. Here are the images. Here are the photos. Here's all the info. If you're giving me, you know, great images, you're giving me all those stats. That's something that makes my pitch more powerful. It makes getting your brand approved easier. And that's what we all want. So really just giving us as much as possible is great. And then, I don't know if we talked about this, but also targeting it to our brand specifically. We have this gangbuster, you know, franchise at Real Simple called Clever Items, where we round up clever items every month that just make your life a little bit easier. And I'll get pitches that are possible clever item, this item. And once I see that, I know that the person understands what that story is. They understand what I'm looking for. And it makes me 10 times more likely to look at that item and think about it for that feature. Just knowing that.
And something too, and you guys probably do this, but as a public relations professional, I like to test all of my client products in my house so that I know that I'm behind it. I had somebody, you know, we have a new cookware launching with one client, and I was like, oh, we can't send this out because this is happening and that is happening. And, you know, the last thing I want as a journalist to get their hands on something that's not quite ready or not quite as promised, then because that's my reputation at the end of the day, right? That's not theirs.
You can speak about it from your own experience and say, hey, you know, this is, you know, what I experienced when I've used it.
Yeah.
When I've used a piece.
Or some really clutch situations where you use something and everyone's like, I didn't even know I could use that. But we have to have passion too, right? We cook at home. We bake at home. You know, Erica and Nicole, they test things all day long and they still go home and cook and bake. So, you know, if you don't have a passion for what you're doing and who you are representing, then it's not going to work out. Right.
Yep. And I do think that comes true. And if it is reflected in what you get, you sit and think, okay, maybe there is something to this. But it comes down to a lot of times, are you making my life more difficult? I have X amount of time to spend on this. I can't necessarily follow up with you if I don't know that's going to be productive. So I do think that's it needs to be a bigger consideration. And it used to be a bigger consideration, and I'm seeing less of it. And it's tough. Anybody else?
Anyone else? Well, thank you guys all for coming. Thank you so much. We didn't have to talk to an empty room. And thank you to my four fabulous panelists. They're incredible women. I'm so excited and happy that they were here.
Thank you.
Thanks. Woohoo! You guys, we did it!